Armchair Sports Talk. New year, new goals. Probably should score more of those.
Welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. We are joined today by Russ Ivanek.
Hey, how's it going?
And we've got salty Justin Marcus is finally back.
Good morning, good evening, good whatever time you're listening.
Oh, that a boy, that a boy. I'm so proud of you. Jay, we missed you. We missed you last week. It just wasn't the same without you, man.
It's been busy, but I'm glad to bring some salt to your days now.
Yeah, that's good. We need it. I mean, Russ and I are both in such great shape that a little salt never hurt anyone.
Never. Food didn't taste the same. All my mistakes in my food popped up again. I needed you back.
I'm here, buddy. I'm here to support you.
We don't know what to do without you. And I mean, as always, we're all definitely missing D.O. Pauly Rowe. He brought an extra little light to the show. But we'll do our best to still make it good. So we're going to lead off with the Red Wings today. We haven't really talked about the Red Wings since before the first of the year. And since then, I mean, they haven't been doing too bad. Since last time we talked about them, they're a little over 500. Since the first of the year, they're at 500 with 3 wins and 3 losses. Are we seeing a little bit of a turnaround here, guys? I mean, I can't really speak since I have not seen much of the Wings in the last couple weeks, but from everything I'm seeing, it looks like they're figuring it out some of the time.
Some of the time, I guess. I mean, they're a 500 team, right? We're fourth in the Atlantic, which, hey, that's kind of good because 3 make it before the wild card, but we're 6th in the wild card.
Yeah.
Every single team in the Metro has more points than the Wings. So the 4th in the Atlantic is a little misleading, but I need to get this out of the way. How many wins did we have in December?
Let's see.
5?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like 1 more than I needed for the bet?
Victory? I think Pittsburgh lost Matt Murray at one point. They had their backup in. I know we got one of those wins in there. And, yeah, you won the bet.
Still counts. Still counts. 5 wins, 6-pack. Give it to me.
You'll need it for the rest of the season, buddy. So you take
your
6-pack.
Oh, yeah. But to jump back into that, the rest of the season, I mean, 500 is probably a little easier to watch for this year. But I don't like where it sets us up. It doesn't make us bad enough to get a top pick, and it doesn't make us good enough to really make any noise. And I think this team is a couple top-end pieces away from being good anyway, so you really only get that in the NHL by sucking. So
yeah, they're stuck in mediocre purgatory, basically, because they're not good enough to make it in, and they're not bad enough to keep tanking and trust a process or something. But I mean, it's nice that they won some games. I like the fighting aspect. Lets me know that they have a pulse and they still want to, grind it out and represent the logo on their chest. But, you know, I would like to pick a direction, either do something bold and make a push to become a wild card, or just start trading and selling and shipping out anything that has a high price tag. But, you know, it's interesting. It's nice that they're winning some games. It gives you some momentary, enjoyment. But it's time to sell, in my eyes. Get rid of anything, especially Holland.
Now, see, we've talked about this before. I know we have. And I know that I brought it up that Detroit is a hockey city, we're very spoiled. And I just don't think that the Red Wings fans could handle a total rebuild. We're not accustomed to losing so much that, at least with this, where we're showing signs, I think it gives people hope. I don't think that this city could handle a total rebuild and being a horrible hockey team for the next 5+ years.
Well, and we kind of saw it with the Tigers. I mean, it took, how long did it take once that team was bad to really get interest back?
Yeah, that's
like
true.
The first couple of years they started to get good again, it wasn't anything that spectacular. It took a couple years of sustained success, really, to start to win the fans back. Been a little more spoiled with the Wings, so
I think the hardcore
fans will come back, but the casual fans will be, like you said, they'll kind of forget about hockey. And that's something we run the risk of every day, even if it's successful, because we're here in the States.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, it's very true. But I think, wouldn't you say, the Tigers is a very good comparison, but I think we've got to admit that the Red Wings over the last 25, almost 30 years, are a different monster. I mean, no team's ever had that kind of success with playoff consistency. We won 4 cups. I know it's been a while since we've won a cup, but at the same time, like, that's just like the our generation, at least, because our generation's seen the success from almost beginning to end. And I just think a rebuild would just do too much to us that I don't think we could handle it. I really don't. I mean, we're finding ways to poke apart being 500 in the last 6 games. Imagine if we were, you know, only winning 25% of our games for the next 2 years.
Well, while that might be true, I think, yeah, it's gonna affect fans a lot. I don't know how we get back up to the top end without being bad. It's not like a Stamkos or a Tavares is actually going to hit free agency and come to Detroit when there's not a lot to play for. You know, you need to get in the draft, get someone like this Ross Mandahlin kid who looks phenomenal, and really start doing there, because I'm not confident that this front office can hit a home run on a draft pick anymore. It's been so long since one of the first-round picks has actually panned out well.
No, I agree. Jay?
And Russ, you brought up a good point. I think it all does come down to the front office, including Holland, because it's a business decision. If, you know, if they're worried about the fan base, if we can handle, like Eric, you're bringing up, can the fan base sustain a rebuild? The other half of that equation is the business side. It's the money. Yeah. I have no idea how they financed all of that. I know part of it is through taxes with the new stadium. But there's got to be a cash flow answer as well, where they need the money to come in, a.k.a. they need to keep a happy fan base. And they can't tank, or they need to have a front office that can make the right decision and bring in a name to keep the fan base happy, to keep the money coming in, because the bottom line is the dollar. And if they can't financially support a rebuild, then, you know, there's the answer. And I think they should. I don't think the money should determine it, but, you know, if they can't stand to lose fans because they can't tank, because they can't afford to tank because of the new building, they're stuck. And I don't know if that's a good look, if that's, you know, the actual situation over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll just schedule, you know, 20 more Kid Rock concerts. Maybe that's how they'll make the money.
Absolutely. Now, my point was going to be, though, because, Rush, you asked how do we get better, you know, without the total collapse and rebuild.
Right.
I'm going to use something that in the start of this, you know, when we started this show, Justin used this word a lot, and I think that we haven't used it in a little while. Do we maybe say, hey, we're not very good, why don't we stop doing all this, to quote Justin, overcooking, and start bringing up more of this young talent and giving them experience? I mean, it can't hurt to give these guys who at one point we believed were going to be on this team, it can't hurt to get them some experience and see what happens. I mean,
right. Oh, no, that would be good. I mean, and we've got a lot of pieces, like Luke Kutkowski. Okay, he fights. Some people are really into it. The guy's got so much grit that I don't know if we measure it, but of course, you know, that's what he's got. But he does nothing for making this team better. So guys like that, yeah, if we brought up Svechnikov, we brought up Bertuzzi earlier in the year, yeah, absolutely, we should be giving them more chances. But I don't know that they have the top-end talent to really take this team where it needs to be.
Yeah, but I guess, to be fair, we like the fighting, one, because for the last few years, we haven't really had that. All these other teams have these guys who will drop the gloves and scrap. We have guys that will do it when they get annoyed, but we don't have someone doing it on a consistent basis. And I think that harkens back to what you were talking about. We have our own little mini version of the grind line a couple of weeks ago. You were bringing that up. And
Yeah. Those
kind of things are sentimental to us, so we kind of latch on to them. A guy who's willing to fight like that is sentimental, because when we were growing up, we had multiple guys that were doing it. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you two are the hockey guys here, but I got to think that aside from fighting and being the protector, Darren McCarty didn't really contribute a lot to this team otherwise. I mean, I know he's got a Stanley Cup winning goal, which was play of his life.
Yeah, the hat trick on Patrick Waugh in the playoffs that one time. That was pretty fun.
That's true. But so can you say that in some regards you grant a little bit of leeway to the lack of putting up stats for the fact that they contribute in immeasurable ways?
In my eyes, they're window dressing. That's all it is. Like Winkowski and McCarty, they're they're window dressing. And I think, Eric, your point of bringing in younger talent, maybe they don't want to do it because if they're underdeveloped and undercooked, it is more damning against the organization. And I would love to see it. I would love to see, you know, get Witkowski out of the way, show me what's behind the closed doors, let them play. And if they're bad, it shows that we have a bigger systemic issue than what is really there. But what other options do they have? Like, I don't know what they would rather do. So I would love to see it. Bring in the younger guys and, you know, the Witkowskis, the McCartys, you know, somewhat the Glendennings and the Ablicators. Maybe they're just there to sell seats because, again, it's all just storefront window dressing. I want to know what's behind the curtain.
I think that's exactly it. What you just said is they're there to sell tickets. They're, mm-hmm. Yes, it can be a useful piece, but you need a strong core around them for them to really be of use. Otherwise, yeah, it's selling tickets. Let's get this out of the way. They're still in the upper half a percent of hockey players in the world because they're in the NHL, even if you're just a goon. But I need more skill because that's not making the team actively better. But mm-hmm. if it falls back to this finance thing that we were talking about of why you're not full in for rebuild, okay, suddenly it makes a little more sense why you're bringing in a Witkowski because you think that's keeping fans in the seats when you know the product's not going to be as good.
I mean, I agree that they are in, or they're there for name because if you think about it, Abby's really the last remaining piece on this Red Wings from the last time we hoisted a cup.
Well, Cronwall was there, but Cronwall.
Does Cronwall still play for the Detroit Red Wings? I thought he died.
Half of his leg kind of crawls out there and plays.
Yeah, so that's let me rephrase because I said that wrong.
Yeah.
Advocator's the last remaining guy who can actually still play hockey from that from that team. Because
and Zetterberg, who's aging,
and I mean,
like
think
milk.
About, yeah, they're holding on to these names because for the generation younger than us, they're the last ones that did it. I mean, it's sad and but I think that we need to realize that we're not contending for anything this year, so we might as well say, hey, listen. It's kind of like when, like in high school, when the football team made the playoffs, you brought the JV and the freshman up to mm-hmm. kind of get some experience to see what it's like. Well, mm-hmm. we're not making the playoffs, so bring the JV and the freshman up. Let them, you know, get a little more comfortable so that next year, when this offseason goes through and we risk Zetterberg not coming back, when Cronwall has to go to hospice and all that stuff, we can kind of...
Yeah, him and Franzen can get a room together.
Has anybody else noticed that I'm getting a little salty right now? We can have these guys who at least have, you know, wetted their beaks a little bit, so they're not going, hey, look, you have to contribute this year. We need goals, assists. You're expected to give us a lot of penalty minutes, all this. Oh, and by the way, here's the NHL.
Right.
You want them to kind of know, that way you know what you're getting, too. A guy gets in for the last 20 games of the year, skates out there and goes against Patrick Kane, goes against, you know, Kessel, goes against Stamkos, sees what it's like to skate next to Brett Burns, the caveman. You can kind of get an idea of, hey, this guy can still do some stuff with the puck even when he's around these top-tier players. Maybe this is someone we need to kind of do a little more looking at. Or you can see this guy's clearly not going to be able to develop. Why don't we try to trade him off while his name still means something?
Absolutely, we should do that. Guys like David Booth have no point on this team right now. It should be bringing up guys and cycling through and give them 5 games, give them 10 games, see what they can do. I think you're exactly right there.
But to take it a step further, we need the right person doing that, and that right person isn't Holland.
Well, no, I mean, I think we've all established for a long time that Ken Holland isn't the right person for this city mm-hmm. anymore. At one point, he was. At one point, Ken Holland was actually a very smart decision. But
do we want to start addressing those rumors that have been floating around?
I was just scrolling to try to find it because I read it as soon as you sent it to me, and I haven't read it since. So
okay.
While you're looking for it, one interesting thing that I pulled out of that, which I did some looking up this morning, he is the oldest GM in the league in terms of tenure. And there's only one other GM that's been around as long as he has, and that's David Poley from the Preds. But they both have been in the league since 97.
Whoa.
And there's no other GM outside of those two that are even close to their tenures. So I mean, just from the premise of getting a breath of fresh air, like, just be done with him. See you, bye. Like, you've been around since, you know, forever, the 90s, the late 90s. Like, goodbye, dude. Get the hell out.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very fair. I found it, but Russ, you broke it, so I'll let you take the lead on this. What's going on with Ken Holland?
Yeah, so it was an article that I first saw on Hockey Feed, but it's since been mentioned by Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province and Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. And anytime Elliot brings up anything, you have to listen. He's one of the most respected names in hockey. And it was basically a rumor that Holland would be going to Vancouver after this year to take over hockey ops over there. Why on earth you would want to go to Vancouver? I mean, I guess they have, like, Brock Besser coming up. Might be a little bit of a better situation. But it kind of leaves us with the feeling of, hey, it's happening. But also, hey, where does that leave us, right?
Yeah.
Do we promote from within? Because that's, you know, the only thing the Wings have really ever done recently. And we saw, you know, Ilitch is owning the Wings, Ilitch is owning the Tigers. We saw when Dombrowski left, Avila got pushed up, right, who was a second-hand man. So is it something that someone from our own front office comes in? If so, does that really give the fresh eyes that we were just talking about needing?
You know who the assistant general manager is?
Yeah, the assistant general manager is Ryan Martin, and his main role in the organization right now is contracts, salary cap stuff. Right? He used to be an agent, he used to be a lawyer. So I don't know if I want the guy who's been navigating the salary cap mess having the keys to everything now.
Yeah.
I mean, then yeah. we have Draper, who's the assistant to the GM, kind of the Dwight Schrute role. You know, he's been there for 7 years. The fans kind of know him. You know, is this something that we hope he ends up like Yzerman did in Tampa, where he might give a new approach?
It'd be a good sell to the fans if it was Drapes, because that's who I was thinking, that he was involved in that, you know, that mess of GM. That, I mean, if I'd rather have Draper than the contract dude. So, I mean, if the rumors are true, sure, it's the start. It's the beginning of a change, and I would sign up for it.
It'd be interesting, and at the very least, then we'd see Colorado and Detroit highlight tapes for a couple months after he gets hired, just showing that whole rivalry for a while, reminding you this is Cripps Draper, as if any of us could really forget.
I'd have no problem with that in the media cycle, just because it means it would be the start of something new. You know, Draper would probably then be the window dressing like Witkowski, and just, I mean, in my opinion, from where we should be, you can't get any worse. I mean, yeah, technically in the standings, sure, why not? But this is rock bottom for our generation of Red Wings. So any change is a welcome change. So hopefully those rumors are true. And I agree with you. You got to respect what comes out of those guys' mouths in terms of when they start reporting it. So if they're saying it, let's hope it happens.
I got to say, I hope it happens. I hope Ken Holland moves on. I think it's time for that. I think he hasn't worn out his welcome, but I think he's done enough negative here in the last few years that, you know, he's never going to be given a fair chance to recover from it. So I think they need to move on from that. The thing I don't like is I like Draper as a coach. I don't like him as anything else. I see him more as a locker room guy. I don't see him as a guy who, don't get me wrong, I don't know Chris Draper. I don't, you know, I know what I see, I know what I read, but I feel like he would be able to do a lot more for this organization in the locker room as the coach, as a guy who it's the same as we were talking about head coaches in the NFL. That guy who has the playing experience, it means that little bit more because they know what's going on out there. They've experienced it at the same level, the same speed, and they can kind of relate and they can adjust. I see him as someone who can do that. He strikes me as a guy who can get in that locker room. Players know who he is, and he'll be able to relate with them. And I just see him more as a coach. Now, if they decide to go in that direction and get him, for all I know, he could turn this organization around the next few years. But I just think that if we're going to do this and we're going to step away from Holland, it might be time to step away from everything Holland and maybe start our own new tradition and not grab onto the names of old. Because then you gotta you gotta talk about Chelios. Chelios has been with this organization for a long time. Why not him?
Well, Eric, if I can real quick, I think what you are describing is true, but I still think he can do that as a GM, even if Draper's being considered for this. Because, again, we're just speculating.
Well, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, all speculation.
Yeah. I think he could do it, though, because if we're going to be a middling team who can't be bad enough to get draft picks, we need to improve through trades and free agency. And if that's the GM's role, I can see Draper selling a team better or selling a trade or an acquisition better than Ken Holland. I think that would be one of the better people to actually do that. So you take those qualities that you want a head coach to have that you think Draper can do. I think he could do that as a GM by bringing in people, because no one wants to come play in the city, and no one especially wants to come play with the team when it's being steered by Ken Holland. You put Draper in there with his red hair and his smile and his, you know, history of fighting and grinding it out, I think you could sell it much better. So maybe it would be a good fit to have him in that position.
I agree. A player GM is a good asset too. I mean, look what Steve Yzerman did with the Lightning. They're a pretty good hockey team. He's had a lot of success down there because he knows what's needed to put the pieces together. He's seen the pieces put together multiple times. That's why he's got 3 Stanley Cups and is, you know, one of the greatest players ever. He's seen that and how it's done, and he's mirrored it. Maybe not in the exact same frame, but he's found a way to make it his own. And I Draper could do that because Draper was there for all that too. He's seen what you need and what you don't need to make it happen. I just, looking at Chris Draper, I just see more coach there than I do GM. That's not to take anything away from him. It's just what I see.
Well, I got 2 points in Draper's favor here. One, I mean, against the coaching thing, when he retired, he went straight to the front office. He's been a special assistant to Ken Holland. This is his 7th year. So he's been living that day in and day out, hasn't been doing the coaching stuff as much. But if we're talking about trades, who else do you want pulling the trigger on a trade than a guy who knows how to get traded for a dollar?
I knew someone was going to bring that up. That's why I was trying not to be the guy. Because, like, literally, the guy's worth a dollar to this organization. It was going to be what I was going to say. But, no, it's we got our value out of that dollar.
Well, and we can call him the Dollar General when he takes over. The nickname's already set. It's got to happen.
Hey, if we're calling this here, boys, like, if we're nailing this, I haven't read this or seen this anywhere. It's a little bit of a stretch, but I swear to you, if we're calling Draper and that actually happens, this podcast needs just to go everywhere because we called it first then.
Oh, my God. The Dollar General Draper. I love it.
That's awesome.
I'd be excited about it.
Okay. No, I I'm not opposed to it. I'm just, you know, I have to give my 2 cents, and my 2 cents go the other way. I just, like I said, Chelios kind of strikes me as more the guy. He just seems to be, you know, a little more right for that role. But like you said, Draper retired and went right to the front office. I also know, though, that, like, from seeing things and, you know, watching stuff on the news, when we had those Winter Classics and those outdoor games and all that, Draper was actually working with the team on the ice. He was helping out practices. So it just shows that, you know what, there has to be a little bit of an interest there in coaching, because if you don't want anything to do with being on the ice anymore or being directly involved with the game, you don't do that kind of stuff. You stay up in the front office. That's the reason Steve Yzerman hasn't put skates on in the last decade, because he just doesn't have any interest in it anymore.
Look, so Draper knows the nuances of the game well enough. I mean, to be the face-off guy, the penalty kill guy that he was, he knows the game well enough that I have no question that he could coach.
Yeah.
I just think he's chosen the front office path for himself.
Yeah, that's more than fair enough. So let's see, this was on the 9th. There was grades put out for mid-season for the Red Wings.
Right.
And we brought him up
from Prashant Iyer from the Athletic.
Yeah. And that's not the right one. I clicked on the wrong one. And I know Russ and I talked about it before the show last week. We didn't really agree. I feel like some of these guys were given a little bit higher grades than they rightly deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I remember correctly, I believe they had Erickson as either a B- or a C+. And I think that's just...
B-, yeah.
I think that's just an absolute travesty.
Yeah. No, I can't justify higher than a C for him. Even if he's been doing a little better as a shutdown role, it's still Erickson. He doesn't do any one thing particularly well.
Yeah, it's true.
Were there any others that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. I had it on my phone, and then I accidentally jumped out of it. So,
what are you doing? Using your phone for like phone calls or something?
Yeah, that would make too much sense. I believe the two that I was not ecstatic about was Erickson and then Glenn Denning, because if you ask me, Glenn Denning hasn't really contributed very much to this.
Glenn Denning's my man. Ever since the playoffs 2 years ago, Glenn Denning, he's the epitome of a grinder for me. And I think he does it quietly too. And I haven't even seen the report card yet, and I was going to ask once he pulled it up.
Here we go.
My highest grade would go to Glenn Denning.
Really?
I'm very high on Glenn Denning.
Okay, yeah. I'll rip
higher than Larkin.
Yes, because Larkin I expected more. So because of the expectation part, he would be lower for me. Again, I haven't seen the grades, but Glenn Denning is probably one of the more consistent guys on our team, in my opinion.
Okay, and this was on The Athletic. And again, I you guys need to go on here because I saw another one while I was scrolling through. They have opinions on the players, and I only saw the first one because it's alphabetical. According to what it says, Anthony Cio is surpassing expectations for this year. So that could be a very interesting read.
Yeah, I actually agree with that in a way. He's a real streaky guy, well, one way and the other, and that's kind of what we expected. But he's added a level of transition game and chemistry with Larkin that I wasn't expecting so soon.
Okay. All right, here we go. I like this. We're gonna make a game here, because Jay has not seen these, so we're gonna make a game. Jay, we're gonna play salt or no salt.
Oh.
I'll read you the grade. You give me salt if you do not agree, or no salt if you're okay with the grade given.
Okay.
So here we go. Dylan Larkin for midseason, A.
Salt for sure.
Okay. Anthony Mantha, B.
No salt.
No salt? You can live with that grade?
I can live with Mantha, yeah. I do expect more out of him, but... pausing real quick on those two.
Okay.
We've talked about who you expect more out of and who should be controlling the team, right?
Yes.
I am higher on Mantha than I am on Larkin. I think Larkin is a nice asset on the side of Mantha. So that's why it's reversed like that. I'd rather see Mantha. I'm okay with the B for Mantha. I'd rather have Larkin, you know, his grade so far is lower, but I think that, you know, I still expect more out of Mantha than Larkin, so I would switch them in terms of, you know, grading them, for sure.
I know. You've said you see Mantha as more the Stevie and Larkin as the Fedorov. I understand that, and I get that. That makes sense. Russ, what were you going to say?
Well, Larkin's got 6 more points than Mantha so far this season, and he's playing on the penalty kill constantly, which has been the only one of our units right now that is performing above average. I think Larkin's the best guy on this team right now.
I wouldn't argue with that, actually. I believe we've all heard me be high on Larkin this year. All right, Jay, so Anthony Cio, B.
I got to say no salt because we look foolish with the contract negotiations, given we didn't have a dime to spare. But he's doing just fine.
Okay. Nyquist is a B?
I'll stay no salt. I don't really have too many grievances there.
The captain is B-.
Salt.
Yeah.
He gets a free pass because of the beard and his longevity, but that dude's nothing than a third line at best. So.
Okay. Baby Bertuzzi is a B-.
Too early to grade that?
They don't have a quarter grade for him, but they have a midseason grade.
Okay.
And I'm not reading these quarter grades because Justin will go crazy if I read these quarter grades. So.
No salt on that. He's got time to, you know, to maturate yet.
Okay. Abby, B-.
He can't drop the gloves because that stupid shield on his face. I'll put salt because he can't be as gritty as he normally can.
Okay. Now, this one you're high on, and this is where we disagree because I think they graded him too high, and I think you're going to probably think they went a little too low. They have Glendening as a B minus.
The smallest amount of salt. I think he's more consistent than most people who put on skates for the Red Wings. So I would a solid B or a B plus. I think he does a lot of the dirty things that no one really sees. It's not on the stat sheet. I'm high on Glendening. But,
so you're salty that they went low.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Ferk is a B minus.
I can live with that.
Okay.
No salt.
No salt. No salt. Okay. I like this. Tatar is a C.
I see that. I expect that out of him. I expect a C performance game.
You expect middle of the road, not going to do too much to hurt us, but not going to do too much to help us.
Yeah, I mean he has flashes of you know brilliance sometimes, but
doesn't most of our team have flashes? That's what we are. We're a bunch of flashes.
Well, when you're always in a dark room, any flash will be bright. Okay,
we're the Detroit Flashers right now. You realize that correctly?
Can we get that changed?
Put away your trench coat. not literal.
Nielsen is a C.
That might be a little low.
You think
I don't know if they're. I mean, if they're just going on points, then sure. But I mean, he kind of gets a little bit of the Zetterberg treatment. He's somewhat of a veteran. I would be. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I think they probably got that just about right. In my opinion,
I think so as well. With him making $5.25 million, being a third line center.
Yeah. David Booth is a C.
Salt, get off my damn team. Go away. I don't want to. The only kind of Booth I want is one that I'm going to sit in tonight to eat dinner. I got no business with David Booth on this team.
Atta boy. Helm, C minus.
Sure, why not?
You're going to be okay. Subpar. Wachowski, C minus.
No, give him some love. I mean, he probably got 10 more people to watch when he came back from suspension, so he can have a little bit of enjoyment on the team. So add some. He needs some more flavor to that grade.
So you're comfortable. Okay, now we're going to move over to the defenseman.
Can you just salt everybody?
Yeah, I think you can. But this guy, because we had it wrong. This guy just does not deserve the grade he was given. Erickson is a B minus.
Oh, God.
I want to know what he did to contribute that you give him a B minus on this hockey team.
No, that's garbage. He doesn't deserve any passing grade, just let alone the fact that we don't utilize his size and his abilities. He's got hands made out of flipping bricks, and he's big. He doesn't fight. He doesn't push people out of the crease. No. Okay. He gets an FF minus.
Okay, so he's like super salty.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike Green is C plus.
I would actually. I don't like that. He needs to be higher. He needs to be in the B's.
See, I don't agree. I think he's been middle of the road this year.
Yeah, no, you can't put Martin Ferk and Helm in the same breath as Mike Green. You can't do that.
You can this year. Mike Helm is, for the name we got, that I he's not giving me enough to go, oh, yeah, you definitely are doing better.
Yeah, but he's not Mike Green from when he was the goal scorer, the highest defensive goal scorer from the Capitals. He's already passed that bell curve.
I understand that, but I feel like there should be a lot more contribution than what we're getting from him. So, okay. Trevor Daly, C.
I mean, you're an acquisition defenseman playing for the Swiss Cheese Red Wings. Sure, that works.
Cronwall, C.
I would go lower on him. And Zetterberg are supposed to be the voices in that locker room. I don't see him doing anything on the ice at all. Yeah. Again, I think Russ said his leg might show up once in a while. I haven't even seen that.
They had NA for Bertuzzi's quarter grade because they didn't have one for him. I feel like Nicholas Cronwall should just be NA. There should be no grade because he can't contribute anything. Nick Jensen, C minus.
Yeah, he's had some bad performances, so that's fine.
DeKeyser, D plus.
No salt. No salt.
Willette, D plus.
Oh. Xavier, the only acquisition move of Ken Holland. He's Ken Holland, like, prodigy right now. No salt.
No salt. Okay. Jimmy is a B+. I actually agree with that. Jimmy has been better this year, to say the least.
he's like a victim of all the crappiness that is the Red Wings. That's fine. I got no salt on that.
And Mrazek C minus.
Yeah, he's goalie 1B for me for sure.
Right now he is, which I have to apologize for because I know I've been a lot higher on Mrazek this year than I have on Jimmy, and it's not very well deserved.
C minus, no salt. That's fine. I mean, again, I would any defenseman or any goalie. C minus or less, without a doubt. You put anything above it, then I'll get salty on it.
All right, and that should have been your weekly episode of Salt or No Salt with Spooky Marcus. All right, guys, well, real quick, we got to switch over because we got to talk about this. The Detroit Lions head coaching search has just become a week-by-week free-for-all because now Matt Patricia is now, again, the favorite to be the Detroit Lions head coach. Russ, do you like this? Do you really read much into it? Seeing as no one can talk to Patricia or he can't make an announcement till after the Patriots win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I like it, and I'm buying into it. There's still a sliver, right, that it's not going to happen, but there's also reports out there that the Lions are actively telling other coaches that they've found their man. Take that with the same grain of salt you take anything else, right? So, but I think it's encouraging that more and more reports are going out. The Giants are interviewing more different coaches other than Patricia.
Mm-hmm.
I think the beard's coming to Motown. It would be Honolulu Bluebeard. Bring him in, and hopefully he can take us to the next level.
I hope so, too. Now, Jay, we didn't get a chance to hear your opinion on this last week other than the text message you sent me, which was beautiful. Just beautiful. Well written. Very well done. Are you buying in on the Lions going out there and potentially getting a first-time head coach and having a good chance at success from it?
Yeah, I think it's an attractive spot to land for any coach. I would definitely like the idea of like a first-time new coach coming in and putting his spin on the team. In terms of Patricia, I love it. Obviously, like it's hard to pass on anything that's coming out of New England and seeing if it translates elsewhere. I think we are favored because of the relationship between Quinn and Patricia, and I like that he's defensive-minded because though you know our secondary was good, our D-line needs to get better, and if he can bring in a good scheme and apply it here with the players that I don't know if they're going to fit into the scheme, I do like it. I like the beard. I saw a picture of him yesterday without a beard and like a white polo on. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And you fast forward to bearded hat, backwards hoodie on. Love it. Bring him in the blue. It might translate well for the Lions. I like it, and I think it's going to be a good testament of Quinn's abilities and Patricia's abilities. So you're kind of putting them both in a corner to perform with a decent team that needs work in all spots. I don't see anything wrong with it, so I hope it actually happens.
Now, are you Matt Stafford has come out and said that he would like to see Jim Bob Cooter stay. Is that something you would be open to, or are you thinking Patricia needs to come in, clean house, fresh start, let's do this the right way?
I'd give Jim Bob Cooter a year. I mean, just like Quinn probably had to give Caldwell a year, you give Cooter a year, you take the other parts of the equation out of having Caldwell there, open it up for Cooter, see what he can do. It's throw him into the deep end and see if he'll float. And if he doesn't float, see you bye. And personally, I don't like Stafford coming out saying what he wants. You know, he's the quarterback. Yeah, he makes a lot of money. You're a quarterback. That's what you should be doing. You shouldn't be publicly telling the team how they should be operating. I think he should keep that to himself and not get that out there. So I don't like the fact that he's expressing his opinion because it shouldn't sway ownership. But, you know, we've seen athletes command the room. Look at LeBron. He can basically do anything he wants in Cleveland, and he'll throw it out there, and he'll probably get his way. I hope that's not the case with the Lions.
That's because LeBron is the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He tells them what to do.
General manager. Owner,
right. He tells that organization salesman. What to do. Yeah,
you missed head case. That's his biggest.
Yeah, that's very true.
But now I asked Russ this, and I'll ask you too, just so we get it all in. Whoever the new coach is, how much leeway are they getting before we get back to we need to make a change? I mean, if Patricia is hired and comes in, and 3 years from now, we've made the playoffs all 3 years, and we're we finish the season 10-6 every year. Of course, you're going to hold on to him. But if we have a case of 10-6, 7-9, 9-7, which I believe is pretty close to what Caldwell did while he was here. Are we looking at the same thing, or are we kind of saying, listen, we need to stick with someone long enough to like actually get some, you know, get some changeover, you know, make things happen?
I think that answer lies actually a step farther, and I think it's Quinn. I think this is all Quinn's baby. I think whatever coach comes in, it's, you know, if he has an average year, misses the playoffs, you know, if he's mistake-free and he counts to 11, good. But if we aren't, if we're not progressing at all with the new head coach, be it a first-time head coach out of Patricia or anyone else that, like Vrabel or the Shuler, the dude out of Minnesota.
Shurmur, yeah.
There it is. If it's any of those guys, I think if it's not a success or a home run in year one, that falls on Quinn more than it does the head coach.
Okay. I mean, that's more than fair. Now, before the show, we were discussing this, and there's still a few more jobs open out there. The Colts, the Cardinals, the Giants. A, does Todd Haley, who actually has NFL experience as a head coach, being let loose, does he kind of shake things up? And B, there's also rumors that Mike Tomlin might be losing his job. So Pittsburgh might be doing a complete overhaul. How much does a name like Mike Tomlin shake up the coaching searches for some of these guys? Do you see maybe potential for someone to go, we kind of had our man, but we got to look at Tomlin?
I think Tomlin turns the whole thing on its head, and all bets are off for all teams if he gets out there. I mean, I think it's something that the Giants probably jump on him because, hey, they're a big market and he's a huge name. But no, I don't think anybody's safe if Mike Tomlin becomes available.
I would have to agree. Now, Jay, I asked this question to Russ last week, and I wanted to ask you because I feel like we could maybe get a fun answer out of this. ESPN 2 weeks ago put out the 5 head coaching jobs that were available, and they wanted to know what would be the most appealing. And at the time, it was Chicago, Detroit, Arizona, Indianapolis, and New York. Of those 5 jobs, which job is the most appealing to a coach? Which one has the most upside for success?
Now, Chicago, they've already gotten a head coach.
Yeah, they already have one. But I'm putting him in there because that's the 5th, because Russ and I discussed that. So if it was still available.
That would have been my answer, Chicago. I like Trubisky. I think he's a solid quarterback. I think him and Garoppolo have bright futures. Obviously, San Francisco doesn't need a head coach. But I would have gone Chicago first, then the Lions, just because I like the future of Trubisky better than Stafford's. And then just to flip it, job I would not want is the Giants. I would not want to be the head coach having to tame the diva that is Odell Beckham, act like a dog celebrating touchdowns.
He agrees with me. I love this. This kid's great.
No. I don't. OBJ,
he's a head case. He's a head case. I don't care what anyone says. He's a head case.
He was good for me when I won my fantasy league, but I got.
Yeah, I'm shocked to hear you saying this, Justin, because all I've had to do is hear you talk about OBJ since he got drafted.
Hey, follow the money. I was winning fantasy championships with it. Your name could have been anybody, and I was going to make it, you know, my team name. But to go back to your
loyalty,
question, though.
The loyalty.
Chicago. I would have gone Chicago. I like Trubisky.
I think Russ and I were pretty much on the same page that Chicago and Detroit were the top two because we've all talked about Trubisky, and I think we all have some pretty good reviews for Trubisky this year. I thought it was a reach in the start, but it's no longer a reach. The guy's a real NFL quarterback, and if they can just keep adding pieces there, Chicago could be a very scary offense in the future. So, yeah, he seems to agree with us, which I'm finding weird. Lastly, a poll came out right before we started this, and we were discussing it. Ziggy Ansah's contract needs to be re-signed. What would you guys like to see the Lions do here? Do we franchise tag him? Do we give him the contract he's going to demand? Do we try to lowball him a little bit and say, hey, you can take this guaranteed money, or you can walk and see what you're going to get out in free agency, where you had the last 2 years have not exactly been rake-it-in cash years? Russ, what are you doing here?
I think whatever happens, you can't let him out of the door this offseason. We are so bereft of defensive line talent on this team. It's him and then, a big step down and maybe Zettel. right? Like he had 4 or 5 sacks this year, maybe even 6.
Well, what's his name? He hurt his leg in the very first preseason game.
Kerry Hyder
is going to be a good defensive lineman for this team.
And hopefully he is, and hopefully he can stay healthy. But I mean, I think Ziggy, for all of the inconsistency and maybe the injuries, what caused that? But for all that he's been, he's hands down our best defensive lineman. And
I'm not going to argue that.
I would like a 2-3 year deal to see if he can stay healthy. But if we can't work that out, it's got to be a tag, because you cannot let him leave without any kind of plan to fill his spot.
But are you comfortable saying we're going to give you $18 million for this next year? That's quarterback money.
I'm not comfortable with it, but I think you got to do it if you can't get a contract otherwise.
Now, like the 50, like the, it broke down in percentages, and the leading percentage was offer small contract, 2-year, $20 million, let him go if he passes. That doesn't seem like the smarter say. Like, here, we'll give you 2 years, maybe more, a little more than $20 million. It doesn't have to actually be $20 million.
Yeah.
That's a lock number. But, and do you say, hey, listen, here's this. You got 2 years, $20 million or $25 million or whatever, to show us, and if you can show us that you're worth this money you're asking for, you're in line for a big, big contract.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love that. If we could go 2 years, 20, 2 years, 24, yes, sign me up, please. But if he doesn't agree to it, I don't think you can just let him walk.
No, I mean, I think we have to tag him regardless, but I think you got to throw out an offer, see where he's at, because if you're not too far away, you can maybe get something at a bargain and extend it. And if it's like, no, not even close, I want like quarterback money, I want Ndamukong Suh money, then you got to kind of go, okay, franchise tag, we'll eat the bullet here, but we need you to be in this in this stadium. So Justin, what are you thinking here?
I think you got to pay the man and make sure he doesn't leave, because if we have another hole to take care of in the draft, we're going to be another step behind with getting to the playoffs. I think you keep him. I think you pay him. You probably are going to have to overpay him, and then we can draft on the offensive side of the ball, because any defensive piece you can keep, just keep it in place. Try to save as much money as possible, but you don't need more holes to go fill through the draft, because we already have a run game that needs help through this draft.
I agree. But in the way of the draft, I mean, I couldn't even tell you where I think the Lions are going. I mean, obviously we need a running back, but I mean, you could also see the Lions looking at another year of taking an offensive lineman. And while I don't agree with that decision, I feel like that's kind of inevitable.
Yeah, it's got to be O-line. I don't know what, I mean, if you move away from the Abdullah project, you know, you're going to still put in another back that has to deal with a crappy O-line that didn't play well this year. So I would give Abdullah another shot, fix the O-line, pay Ziggy to stay, and try to gel that all together with the Jim Bob Cooter offense, and, you know, hopefully get more defensive-minded through Patricia, and that sounds like a good formula, at least it's balanced.
It does sound great. I want Sony Michel from Georgia. That dude can run the football. He just runs for days. I want Sony Michel. I think that would be the greatest running back pickup we could make.
I don't think you have to take him in the first.
I don't think we have to at all. I'm not saying he's our first-round pick. I just want this guy. I think I see a lot of potential with this guy.
Right. No, we're saying the same thing. I was saying that as a benefit, is you don't have to spend a first-round pick to get him. All the more reason to look at him.
Absolutely. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about, because I mentioned it last night, and I just want to get your guys' opinion real quick on it. We're seeing mock drafts for days. Mock drafts for days. How much stock can you really put in to a mock draft right now? Because at this point, the most recent one that I've seen, I don't know if you guys have seen any today, but I texted everyone this one, a screenshot of Mel Kiper's mock draft for 18. He has Josh Allen, Wyoming's quarterback, who I think is a great quarterback, I really do, going over Rosen, and Sam Darnold's dropped to the 5th pick in the draft. I mean, how much weight can you really put in these? Because it seems like every time you see a mock draft, it's the same 10 names, but they're not in the same order. I mean, I saw one a couple weeks ago that had Saquon Barkley being the first overall pick to the Browns, and then the Browns took Rosen with the 4th. So I'm a little curious as to how much stock you put into this. Do you feel like maybe those are the first 10 we're going to see in not that order, or is this just kind of grasping at straws and seeing what sticks?
I think you put about as much stock into it as you would about a single ply roll of toilet paper wiping your butt. You know, you use it, but you better hope your fingers don't poke through.
I mean, that's a very fair assessment.
Yeah. When you texted us about this last night, I went and started digging a little bit.
Yeah.
And looked at last year's results, compared it to the earliest Kuiper mock draft I could find, which was early February, the earliest Mayock mock draft I could find, which was in April, and then the earliest one I could find from Walter Football, which is a site that has a huge database of NFL mock drafts. So if you're looking to climb down the rabbit hole, walterfootball.com.
There you go.
Free plug.
Free plug,
but
there you go.
I looked at him, and Mayock had 3 picks exactly right. He had 4 picks within 3 picks of where they ended up. And the rest of his top 15 all ended up being first-round picks. And Kuiper was very similar. In his top 15, he got 2 exactly right. He got 4 within 3, and the remaining 9 were all first-round picks. So kind of what you were saying, I think it's going to show you who the names are, but the order of them, no chance, nothing to buy into as far as at this point.
Okay. Now, my real question is for this mock draft, is it a little surprising to see Rosen and Darnold not be 1 and 2? I mean, for all intents and purposes, they were considered the locks to be the first 2 picks in the draft. And now you see, and we haven't seen a pro day, we haven't seen a combine, but somehow Sam Darnold goes from being either the 1 or 2 to now the 5th pick in the draft, and a guy who was not even in the top 10 for most mock drafts is now the number 1 pick in the draft.
Is that from Kuiper's draft?
That's the one I sent last night. Mel Kuiper has Josh Allen from Wyoming jumping all of them and becoming the first overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, I'm like Russ, I think, because you got to see who the, you know, he knows who his audience is, but the person putting on the show is ESPN, and I think those mock drafts are indicative of how many clicks or views or likes or shares ESPN needs to still be relevant. I don't put any stock into it, because I think it's like the college football committee putting together the first top 4, and you know, they maybe, I think they still show the 5 and 6 hole too.
Yeah.
It's all just to get a stir and a buzz and a draw and a click, and it's clickbait. It gets people like us talking about nonsense, because you're right, those 2 guys should be 1 and 2, and they do it just to stir up attention. So there's your salt intake for the day, because I think it's all a bunch of BS.
I mean, you're
so not buying Rosen above the other 2.
Say that again?
So you're not buying
Josh Allen,
you're not buying Josh Allen above the Rosen and Darnold?
No.
I don't think you should.
I don't think you should either. I like I said, I've seen him play a few games. I followed him a little bit, and I think he's a very good quarterback, and I think whoever gets him are going to get a good quarterback. But these other 2 have played on national scales for the last couple of years. They have the late-night games. They have the big games, the primetime games. And I just think while that shouldn't matter, it carries a little bit. Playing in an NFL game at 1 o'clock is different than playing an NFL game at 8:30 at night when you know everyone's watching. And these 2 have both proven they can do that. Wyoming doesn't play a lot of late-night primetime games, so I think you don't know what you're going to get there. I mean, we've seen a lot of guys who shouldn't have missed big time. So I don't think you need to buy into it, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised. You can't really be surprised. Things change so quickly in NFL. So it's tough. Lastly, give me the one guy that you would love to see the Lions take. It can be anything, even if we don't need it. The one guy you'd like to see the Lions get.
I don't have a name, but late round running back. I think there's, again, just this past draft showed that you can get quality running backs who are going to start week in and week out late in the draft. What I don't want to see is the Lions over pick a running back early if we can get someone late that's going to be just as effective, so we can address the O-line and elsewhere.
So you don't want to see a reach. Okay, I get you.
Yeah, I don't want to reach. I don't want to Saquon Barkley. I want someone else.
So Justin's kind of like with me. He wants he would like the Sony Michel kind of pick. So
yeah,
I would
live with that.
Russ?
I would live with that.
I'm with you. I don't want a running back in the first, no matter what. Yeah. I need a pass rusher. Like, Astros are first round, maybe second round too. This defensive line needs so much help. I mean, I think that's where you start to help the defense along, because that makes Slay and Quinn's jobs all the easier, trying to defend passes, if we can actually get some semblance of a rush.
So you guys are both good, though, if we don't touch that offensive side of the ball for the first couple picks.
First two picks at least, yeah. Yeah, give me defense and then defense.
Okay.
I don't want to see a wideout or a running back or a long snapper or anything in the first couple of rounds. Go defense. Or the O-line. I'll be fine with the O-line. But if you go O-line one, then you have to go on the other side of the ball without fail on the second pick.
I like it. All right, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. It's always good to be back. We really enjoy doing this. My thanks to Salty Justin Marcus.
Anytime, buddy.
Russ Ivanak, you always come up with those great stats for us, so I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be on.
Oh, good. We always appreciate you guys listening. Hope you don't go anywhere. Hope you keep listening. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
Armchair Sports Talk. Love, hope, faith. Have you no optimism, sir?
No.